I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Molly Jongfast, and this is Fast Politics, where we discuss the top political headlines with some of today's best minds. And Congressman George Santos is now a volleyball star at a university he never attended. We have a super interesting show for you today. New York Times contributor Justin Wolfers drops by to give us a simple, easy-to-understand explanation of what's going on in the U.S. economy. Then we'll talk to Puck News' Tara Palmieri about the world's most dysfunctional workplace, the United States Congress, and Biden's document storage issues. But first, we have the one, the only, Washington Post's Dana Milbank. Welcome back to Fast Politics, Dana Milbank.
It is an honor and a privilege, Molly. Thank you.
You know, I'm like a huge fan. So every time we can get you, I'm like,
Well, it's a mutual admiration society, then.
Oh, thank you. But first, we must talk about how, and by the way, this is like such a good title and so absolutely 100% true. To save himself, McCarthy just destroyed the House. I feel like it needs like a dot, dot, dot more than Newt Gingrich.
Yes. Right. It's sort of a false premise baked in there that everything was fine beforehand.
Right. Exactly. What's so interesting about McCarthy is he really does have all of the worst qualities of the modern day MAGA GOP.
Well, yeah, I think so. But what he has in addition is this sort of absence of any sort of core belief. So I think he arguably shares that with Trump. But at least some of the MAGA crowd actually believe passionately in what they're talking about, whether it's
diamond and silk.
But, you know, whatever their particular belief system is, whether it's white supremacy or, drowning government in the bathtub, there's a belief in something. McCarthy doesn't really have that. He has a belief in his ability to hold on to power, to advance himself. And what really troubles me about what he did there is not just that, okay, so he's got a motion to vacate. He can get kicked out with, you know, if any one member disapproves of him, basically. It's not that he's going to bring all these cockamamie things to a vote. He has agreed to changes, particularly one with his super PAC, that is going to guarantee that even more crazies get elected in each future election cycle. So he's dooming not just this Congress, he's dooming future ones. So as part of this deal, the Club for Growth, which is basically an insurgent group that was fighting McCarthy, struck a deal with McCarthy's Conservative Leadership Fund, which is a super PAC that's effectively under McCarthy's control. And they agreed they would no longer get involved in nomination fights in safe Republican districts. Now, of course, 95% of districts are safe. So they've agreed not to participate in those, which basically means they cannot stop the craziest candidate from prevailing, because that's inevitably what's going to happen if some grownups, if there are any remaining in the party, don't get involved. So they're basically saying, Club for Growth, have at it. You can get the craziest candidate available, get them through the primary, and we're not going to stop you.
Yeah, hard to imagine that you could have people crazier than Marjorie Taylor Greene, than George Santos, but that's what we're looking at, right?
Right. I think, you know, what we're starting to find out now is each cycle, it gets a little bit nuttier. So, I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene is being called a sellout now.
Right, exactly.
She's been called a prostitute by one of the January 6th insurrection leaders. So even she is now seen as a tool of the establishment. She was fighting against the 20 holdouts there. So, of course, this is what's going to happen, because what's been happening cycle after cycle in Republican primaries is the way to win in these very low turnout affairs is to be the most out there, to be the craziest. And so the ceiling of crazy in 2022 becomes the floor of crazy in 2024.
And it's interesting, we still don't know, and I think this is a really important data point, and Nancy Mace said this on a Sunday show this week, which is we still don't know what McCarthy has been promising people, including Marjorie Taylor Greene.
That's right. She came out of Tuesday's caucus meeting when they were supposedly presented with this, saying the same thing, that she still didn't know what backroom deals were made, handshake deals were made, what gentleman agreements, although there was nothing particularly gentlemanly about what was going on there
right. On
the floor. And, you know, there was supposedly the secret three-page addendum, which, you know, McCarthy and others claims does not exist. Other Republican members say they've actually read this thing that doesn't exist. You know, and pieces of it are dribbling out. Okay, they're going to have a vote to abolish the IRS, eliminate the income tax, eliminate, you know, corporate taxes. So, you know, we're seeing a little bit of it. We'll learn a bit more with, you know, who's assigned to the committees. But to paraphrase a famous Speaker of the House, we won't know what's in it till we see it. So, who knows what surprises lay in stock for us coming ahead.
But it is worth reflecting on the fact that McCarthy is, I'm not sure that I haven't said this today, an abject moron.
Well, he sounds like one, to be sure, just watching his latest news conference.
But I mean, there was a piece in Politico about why journalists feel they can't just say he's a moron. I mean, there's a lot of, like, it's unusual for a politician to, I mean, except for Louis Gohmert, who is now out of Congress, to be so sort of known as not smart.
Right. Well, remember when Pelosi called him a moron because of his objection to the COVID requirements, and then he made up T-shirts that said moron, which
yes.
Of course was one of the most brilliant self-owns of all time. It's just, you might as well wear it on your sleeve, so to speak. But, you know, I think part of it is he doesn't seem to be able to string a sentence together. And
Is
it a speech impediment or difficulty? You know, I've been writing about this for years. His age will not say that it is. So, you know, obviously we wouldn't be poking fun at him if it were such a thing, but no, they're not saying that it is. So I think that may make him look dumber than he actually is. I mean, you don't get to where he is in life without some smarts. I think it's savvy, right?
Right.
Everybody likes him, you know, great backslapper, you know, he's really good, you know, in the back room, and, you know, he's very good at knowing everybody's family and relatives and what everybody's doing. So there's a certain, you know, genius in that. Certainly he's no policy genius. He doesn't seem to be much of a strategist or even a tactician. And, if, you know, now he's in over his head because you've got you can sort of see the various train wrecks lined up here with the debt ceiling, with the government shutdown, and with everything else, any must-pass legislation. They couldn't even get some, you know, nominal things, you know, affirming the value of law enforcement officers. Couldn't get that through the House this week.
Yeah, no, I mean, the barely, you know, he was not able to whip the votes for himself 14 times. So it does seem possible that his inability to whip votes is going to bite him.
Yeah. And in fairness, I don't think anybody else could do it either, because, you know, you've got a 4-vote majority, you know, 3 votes if Santos is forced out.
Can we talk about this Santos showdown? Because this is kind of incredible.
Mm-hmm.
We have the New York State Party saying that he should resign and McCarthy saying he should stay.
Well, for two different reasons. The New York State Party recognizes that he's an embarrassment and they don't want him there. And McCarthy recognizes that he's my 4th vote. And without him, I only have a 3-vote majority because in all likelihood, they'd lose the seat. So, you know, McCarthy, as we talked about earlier, has one, you know, North Star, one guiding principle, and that is to make sure that Kevin McCarthy clings to power. You know, you can see why it's not in the best interest of the party. It's not in the best interest of Congress, or, you know, let alone the country. But it is in the short-term interest of Kevin McCarthy.
He's won the speakership. He is beholden to everyone in the world. Where does he go from here?
We've seen this week where he goes. I've argued that, you know, they're governing to a large extent based on fantasy. First of all, we had the what Democrats are calling the tinfoil hat committee, you know, that basically the deep state committee being created. But we also had, okay, so the first legislation was to repeal 87,000 IRS agents. Well, first of all, they didn't repeal anything because it's not going to go through the Senate. Second, there aren't 87,000 IRS agents. There are never going to be. So they're basically working against a fiction.
Right.
You know, same thing on this born again legislation. You know, Steve Scalise gets up and said, we're going to stop them from killing infants. Guess what? You already can't kill infants in the United States of America.
The vast, yeah.
So, you know, just a you know, sort of another straw man. So it's like they're not just campaigning on falsehood, it's now actually governing on falsehood. So they're passing legislation to address falsehoods.
Yeah, they're legislating lies now.
Exactly. It's no longer a campaign speech, or, you know, and we had Brian Zinke up there saying on the floor a couple of days ago, saying, you know, that the deep state was coming for me. The deep state didn't get me. The deep state is trying to destroy the American cowboy. And that's why we need this weaponization committee. So, you know, it's not in a, you know, QAnon on 4chan or whatever. It's now, you know, the House Republican majority's official policy is to probe the deep state's destruction of the American cowboy.
I have a question about that crazy Ryan Zinke speech, which is he's 61 years old. Like, imagine being 61-year-old former Secretary of the Interior, one of the few people from the Trump administration who actually was sort of pushed to resign. Imagine, first of all, how bad you have to be for that to happen, right? I mean, you know, Jared Kushner stays in the White House the whole time, but you were forced to resign on ethics, right?
Mm-hmm.
That guy barely gets a congressional seat, right, in a very red state. And he is now decided that the only way, you know, he's going to go full Marjorie Taylor Greene, because the truth is there's no way he believes any of that.
Well, I've given up saying whether they believe it or not. I think you basically teach yourself to believe it by saying it every so often. But it's exactly what we were talking about earlier. You know, a few years back, Tom Massey was talking about Republican primaries. And he said, I used to think the voters were going for the libertarian in the race. And then it occurred to me that, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but they're actually going for the craziest son of a bitch in the race.
Right.
And that, you know, so Zinke gets that, you know, the way he gets the job and keeps the job is to be even more of the craziest cowboy. And, you know, he is, in fact, bringing his cowboy hat onto the House floor. So yeehaw.
Is there any incentive here to behave well? I mean, there was a quote this morning from Chris Murphy, who said that now that these Republicans have created all this chaos, they have this incentive to behave better because they don't want to look like idiots anymore. I have not seen any evidence to support this.
I'd like to believe that. I hope Senator Murphy is correct about that. It seems very charitable, you know, and that's certainly what we need if we're going to avoid a debt default and other things. And look, there are people like that. I'm sure Brian Fitzpatrick and the Republican leadership coalition or whatever they call themselves are thinking that way. But, you know, are they actually going to join in a discharge petition and join with Democrats to fight the crazy? I'll believe it when I see it. But I think for the, you know, the large majority of them, you know, all the incentives are on the other side. It's when you appear that you're caving to the establishment that you're going to get a primary challenge and you're going to get booted out of office.
But it is so weird. I just want to get back to this for a second, that you have these candidates like, so McCarthy didn't want to lose these 20 MAGA Republicans. But if he had said, like, there are more than 20 very blue dogish Democrats who come from, you know, very swingy districts. I mean, like, if you were to scientifically look at the 2022 midterms, you would say voters don't like Trumpism. They want just government to work. They like bipartisan kind of stuff. You know, we may not ideologically align with that, but that is what voters said in this 2022 midterm. But McCarthy just doesn't have any appetite for that because of these primary challenges.
I think he would be out of the speakership before week's end if he were to go in that direction. They didn't spend a moment talking about the possibility of negotiating with Hakeem Jeffries to get a certain number of votes. I mean, that option is always available to him, but that will, you know, create the motion to vacate the chair. So he's completely in handcuffs, particularly now, but in terms of his ability to actually negotiate with Democrats. So yeah, to the extent there are going to be bipartisan achievements, it's going to be done by isolating Kevin McCarthy at this point.
By McCarthy failing, right?
Yeah, he can't afford to do it. It would cost him his job if he were to be seen in the same room with Hakeem Jeffries.
It's so insane because it is, I mean, again, maybe they'll get back into power the way they did in 2016 with just a fluke. But if they were really smart, and obviously, luckily for all of us, they're not. But I mean, you would, like, you watch Jim Jordan on television and he does not look like, at least to me, and maybe I'm wish casting in my mind, but he does not look like a political future I would want for my country.
Well, he looks like a very angry man. So he's a perfect embodiment of and representative of the frightened, angry white men who believe they're losing their place in the emerging, you know, multiracial America. So, Molly, this is the, you know, this is the question of Trumpism, and that is, you know, the whole operating philosophy there was, if you can motivate enough of the frightened white, you know, non-college educated men in this country to vote in extraordinary numbers, you can still win an election with that at this stage. You can't, you're obviously not going to be able to do that, you know, in a decade, two decades from now, but you can for a limited period of time. So that's the premise. But, you know, in the long term, we're all dead. So it may be abhorrent, but it's not irrational.
Yeah, this is such wild stuff. I hope you will come back.
I'm happy to anytime. I enjoy it very much.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What does optimism look like? I'm on a quest to find the people who inspire us to dream more and do more. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. I talk to all sorts of people, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to a hairdresser on Instagram who gives out free haircuts to the homeless, from the CEOs of the world's largest companies to the comedy writer who visited the wreckage of the Titanic. I love talking to leaders, artists, authors, and eccentrics about life, leadership, purpose, mental fitness, human skills, high performance, and other curious things. It leaves me feeling wiser, more inspired, and, well, more optimistic. Because after all, this is a bit of optimism. The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look for it. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Justin Wolfers is a professor of economics at the University of Michigan and a New York Times contributor. Welcome to Fast Politics, Justin Wolfers.
Hey, I'm here for fast economics, not politics, man.
Start with, are we all going to die?
You sound so comfortable talking about economics.
Yeah,
it seems like this is your happy place.
What the fuck is going on, Justin?
I have good news.
Okay, let's go.
The world's getting back to normal.
Oh, I love that. Explain.
The thing that people have been freaking out about over the past year has been inflation. And they've had good reason to. So for as long as you have been a journalist or a wonk,
right.
For as long as most of us have been alive, inflation has been boring. Inflation was 2% almost every year. Sometimes it'd be 1 point something, sometimes it'd be 2 point something. It was boring. We never talked about it. Pandemic hit. The world went crazy. Putin invades Ukraine and inflation went kablooey. Technical term, that one.
Yeah, there's very, very nuanced language there.
Rose to 7, 8, 9%, depending on which measure you look at. Prices at the pump were through the roof. The grocery store was an unhappy place. Buying a new car was so expensive, people would buy used cars, but even they got so expensive. Cost of living was a really important issue. Throughout all of this, people have been asking economists like me, what's going to happen? And we reminded them, this too shall pass. And all of the ructions and madness of the pandemic were affecting the economy in so many different ways. And I kept saying this will pass, and people kept saying, you're crazy, the world's going nuts.
Right.
But we're seeing that it's starting to pass. And so what we actually saw is what economists call the headline inflation number. That's an actual measure of the cost of living.
Okay.
Actually fell last month.
So that seems good.
I don't want your listeners to be confused. I didn't say inflation fell. I said the average price, the cost of living actually fell. It was cheaper to be alive in December than it was in November.
That seems good.
I'm in favor of it.
Yeah.
And so are your listeners. So now a big part of that is gas prices have been coming down, and gas prices is a big part of all of our budgets.
Right.
So what economists tend to do is we don't spend a lot of time looking at gas prices, because gas prices tell us a lot about Vladimir Putin's mood. They tell us a lot about geopolitical ructions in the Middle East. And they're driven by all sorts of things that really don't affect much of the rest of the economy. So we tend to look at something called core inflation, which strips out energy prices, because they're driven by so much other madness. And it also strips out food. Now, it's not that food's unimportant, but food prices go up and down with things like drought.
Right.
Cardi B is upset about the price of lettuce right now. That reflects lettuce diseases in California. And that's not really telling us anything about the underlying state of the economy. So we look instead at core inflation. And core inflation rose, but core inflation's now falling again.
Wait, is that good or bad?
Well, it's good. So we tend to look at core inflation rather than headline inflation because it tells us more about where the economy's going.
Okay.
And it's falling. It's still high, but it's falling. And that's all the really good news that I've got for you.
So we want all of these numbers to go down because these are the numbers that make right now the 1970s, right? Those are the numbers that everyone's anxious about are these inflationary numbers.
Exactly. And so they're coming down. That's good news. They're not yet at levels that I think any of us would find calming. So calm, boring, which is every economist's highest aspiration is for the economy to be boring.
Right.
Boring is when inflation is about 2% or maybe 2 point something. Core inflation, I think, is down to 6.5%. So still quite some distance from boring. But when we talk about the inflation rate, we're usually talking about how different is prices today than 12 months ago. Well, that tells us a lot about what was happening in the first half of 2022. We really care about what's been happening recently. And so over the past 3 months, now here's the exciting news, Molly. I want you on the edge of your seat and maybe can you cheer when this happens?
Really? Yes, absolutely. Let's go.
Okay, because I'm going to wonk out with the number you want to hear.
Wait, you weren't wonking out before?
No, that was my friendly, everyday, just met you at the cafe.
Right, that was the dumbed down version. Okay, good. I'm going to try to pay attention and not get distracted by something. All right, go on, or anything.
Core inflation, that's the one that tells us about what's going to happen in the future. Over the past 3 months, has run at an annual rate of 3.1%. You forgot to cheer, Molly.
Yay! Wait, but you're just telling me what it's run at. Now you got to tell me the good. There's no good news yet. I'm waiting for the good news.
That is good news. So remember, boring is 2%.
Oh, so okay. So it isn't going up.
We're awfully close to boring.
Oh, so that's good.
Which means you might never need
to have
talk
you on the
to
podcast
another.
Ever.
I no, was going to say, you know, kidding. The thing is, Molly, I like to talk about other things. So you and I, next time, we can talk about other things that matter.
Travel.
Unemployment,
right.
Inequality, the environment.
Yes, those are good things.
We probably are going to have to keep having this conversation for another 3 to 6 months.
Right.
But it looks like we're on our pathway to boring.
Oh, so you really think inflation is on its way down?
There's no question. So it was controversial 3 months ago when I said inflation has peaked.
Right.
No longer controversial.
So are you like taking a victory lap here? Are you sticking it to the people who are like kind of the more Republican partisan type economists who were poo-pooing you?
Now, Molly, that is not my personality type, but if you, for instance, wanted to add a couple of paragraphs right now, I think your listeners would love to hear them.
So Jesse texted me a question and it's very unusual that Jesse texts me a question.
Wait, don't move on from I was right, everyone else was wrong.
Jesse says, why is everyone talking about inflation nonstop if it's gone down? And it is true. I was watching the news today and someone was talking about an $8 head of cauliflower.
Yeah. So that's the thing. What I'm trying to do is give you and your listeners a sense of how we know inflation is going to play out over the next few months. So I'm not looking backward, I'm looking forward.
Okay. It's still high and it's still going to hurt for now.
Right. So inflation has run at 6.5% over the past year. That's bad news. If I were in the business of political talking points, I would scream about that. I would talk about not all of inflation. I would talk about egg prices or lettuce prices and so on. But what we know is if you look at the most recent few months, which is really telling us where the economy is going, it's much, much lower. And so the moment of crisis is not past us, but we can see it coming just around the corner.
So again, does this mean that we are coming in for a soft landing and that a recession is not necessarily imminent?
Right. So economists are smart enough never to risk their entire reputations on any one thing. But if you thought about what a soft landing looks like, it would be
this, right?
This. Now, there are a million things that can happen between here and there. I don't want to promise your listeners there's no recession coming, But I do want to say that the folks who say they're certain that there's one coming, and I saw a survey the other day in which 65%, in which professional forecasters said there was a 65% chance of a recession next year. Some were so certain they said they were 90% sure of it. I think those people are overstating the case. So, of course, you should always prepare for the worst and hope for something better. But I'm not as worried as a lot of people are. And this is part of the good news story, which is it's now less likely that the Fed will be tempted to cause a recession to stomp out inflation.
Right, because they don't need to keep raising interest rates if inflation is going down on its own.
Right. And if what I'm saying sounds different than what you're reading in the newspaper, it's because what I'm trying to give you a sense of is what the newspaper is going to say in 2 or 3 months' time rather than today.
But here's my question for you. So these layoffs, we saw Goldman laid off today. We're seeing
Isn't it terrible?
All these tech
Saddest
companies.
Layoffs.
Yeah. Will they be okay? The heartbreaks. But so these layoffs are largely trying to sort of get ahead of, you know, with a sort of eye toward shareholders and, like, you know, using it as an excuse? Or these layoffs, I mean, what are they? Why are they happening right now?
One way to try and track what's going on with the economy is reading individual news stories about individual companies. It doesn't work. And it doesn't work because in any given month, 3 million Americans lose their jobs.
Right.
How many lost their jobs at Goldman? Like 10,000 maybe?
Right.
Yeah, it's maybe 12,000. But it's 0.00%. 3,200 at Goldman. Oh, that's sad.
I'm sure there are people who lost their jobs who are maintenance staff and people for whom this is like, you know, that's not all going to be like wildly overpaid investment bankers.
If you think Goldman directly hires its maintenance staff rather than outsourcing so that someone else can crush their workers, I think you may not understand the financial industry.
All right. Well, that's a good point. But the point is, you know, it's never good when people lose their jobs. But I think there's a really good point here that you think this is more about the companies and less about. And certainly the tech sector has been very overheated with valuations way out of the mainstream.
And again, the normal state of the world for the U.S. economy and for people's lives is jobs are always getting destroyed. They're always getting created. The ones that happen to be destroyed right now are the ones that have journalists who are on that specific beat. So we're reading more about them. So what we don't hear about so much about is, you know, your local travel agent finally closes because who uses travel agents? No one writes that article, but it's probably far more important than Goldman Sachs layoffs. So there are two ways of tracking the economy. One is read newspaper headlines from the Journal and the Times. The other is run large-scale surveys about the entire span of the U.S. economy, which includes small, medium, and large companies, and use sophisticated statistical techniques to make sure they're representative. I'll give you a hint. The second one works. The first approach doesn't.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm curious now, where do you think now this economy is headed? You think that inflation, and this, does this mean, here's another question I want to ask. A lot of people have said, especially Republicans, have said that the Biden administration was absolutely wrong when earlier on, when inflation started, there were talk that it was transitory. Mm-hmm. But if this is actually happening, wouldn't this actually be sort of transitory? I mean, wouldn't this have been caused by supply chain hiccups and, you know, the gas prices? I mean, obviously it's caused by the war with Russia, but, like, I mean, isn't that ultimately kind of supply and demand stuff?
Oh my God, Molly, I love you so much. Yes. So look, there's a big lesson here. So the debate a year and a half ago was will the rise in inflation be transitory?
Right.
The big mistake was that the word transitory means something different in Washington than when economists use it. In Washington, transitory means 2 to 3 weeks. In economics, it means 2 to 3 years. And so what happened after 2 to 3 months was the economists finally learned they had to stop using that word and they walked away from it. Look, the truth is, it's looking a lot like the script that the team transitory economists were describing a year and a half ago, although with one big asterisk, which is I think we've learned that transitory might take twice as long as we had originally hoped it would.
Right.
So things are a little worse than what the optimists had been suggesting they would be. but they are still eventually following the script, that things are on their way back to normal.
Yeah, it sounds like such an interesting and strange time. The Fed raised interest rates half a point in the last raise. Do you think now they're just going to back off completely?
Not completely. So first of all, the Fed plays a really important role in all of this, which is that if they can convince the rest of us that they're going to do whatever they can to reduce inflation, then we'll believe them. And now if I'm a business trying to set my prices for next year and I'll think, well, my input costs aren't going to rise by much because no one's going to raise their prices because everyone believes the Fed.
Right.
And so the Fed has to, like a parent threatening, if you don't behave yourself, I'll take away your toys. That's sort of the role of the Fed. And what it hopes to do is if you're a really good parent, your kids then behave themselves and you never have to take away the toys. Well, in this analogy, take away the toys is cause a recession. So the Fed's sort of saying, I'm willing to cause a recession if you don't behave yourself and stop raising prices. If everyone believes them, they stop raising prices.
Right.
And then they don't need to cause a recession. And that's my hope, that that's the pathway that we're on.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You think that there's a real chance that there isn't a recession now?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So interesting. Justin, I am really grateful to have you on. Just one last thing. Can you remind our listeners that the stock market is not the economy?
So the stock market is not the economy.
Can you explain this sort of market volatility and why it's not so relevant, even though it is relevant?
Yeah. Let me actually start by giving your listeners some advice, which is totally serious. I know that Marketplace on NPR begins every day by telling you what the numbers are. And I know that it's on Yahoo, and I know it's on Google Finance, and I know it's in the newspaper, but you actually don't need to check financial prices more than about once a year. Basically, make sure you haven't lost all your retirement savings and move on with it. So the stock market's not the economy for a bunch of reasons. First of all, the stock market tells you about what's happening to a bunch of large companies and expectations about what's going to happen to a large number of companies. The stock market's really important because knowing what people's expectations are is really important. So that's the sense in which I watch it, but I'm paid to. You don't have to. I'll be here to translate it for you. Secondly, realize large companies ain't the whole economy. First of all, there's small companies. And then second of all, realize that if you think about our total economic pie, that gets divided between workers and bosses. The stock market's all about bosses. So the stock market goes down whenever workers get a bigger slice of the pie. So sometimes a decline in the stock market may actually be good news for those of us who work for a living. And then also, sometimes the stock market's expectations are just plain wrong. They get too excited by one story or another. I wouldn't spend too much time trying to interpret these financial prices, although I do think they're useful as a, just think of it as an indicator of optimism or pessimism. And this is where you also, I'm always struck when I go to the web and I look up the stock market, the first thing it does is it shows me a chart showing me how it's done over the past 30 days. Over 30 days, nothing changes. What you should do is pan back out and look at it over the last 10 years. And that tells you a whole different story. Yeah, there's the day-to-day ups and downs, and that gets the financial press very excited. But for instance, one of the most striking facts is the value of stocks is higher right now than it was on the eve of the pandemic. That's kind of mind-blowing. Your investments actually have risen in value despite a once-in-a-century global pandemic. By that measure, we're kind of pretty healthy. That's not a bad place to be.
All right. I'm happy to hear it. I'll trust you. Thank you, Justin Wolfers. I hope you'll come back.
I look forward to it, mate.
I know you, our dear listeners, are very busy, and you don't have time to sort through the hundreds of pieces of punditry each week. This is why every week I put together a newsletter of my five favorite articles on politics. If you enjoy the podcast, you will love having this in your inbox every Friday. So sign up at fastpoliticspod.com and click the tab to join our mailing list. That's fastpoliticspod.com. Tara Palmieri is a senior political correspondent at Puck News.
Welcome to Fast Politics, Tara Palmieri.
Thanks for having me, Molly.
Seems like things are going great in Congress. Talk to me about what the political landscape looks like right now in Washington, D.C. What are you seeing?
I mean, I think there's like a bit of just sort of dysfunction. Everyone's hanging out. Like, there's no more proxy voting anymore. So
explain that. That seems really like an important data point.
Right. So the margins are really slim in Congress. McCarthy only has 5 votes for a majority. And if Democrats leave Congress, just like say they're not able to vote, you know, a lot of them are older. Some of them have health issues. Just general things happen. People are coming from all over the country. Things like, you know, the flights being down that stop members from getting to Congress to vote, that can really change the game for Kevin McCarthy. So if Democrats don't show up to vote, for every 2 Democrats that don't show up to vote, 1 less Republican is needed to pass legislation.
Right.
So there's an incentive for Democrats to show up because they don't want Republicans to be off the hook when there's only 5, you know, votes that they if they lose, you know, 5 votes, they can't pass what they want to pass. And a lot of it is messaging. But, you know, there's it feels like the first week of school. Like, I'm in Washington right now, and last week was kind of a disaster with McCarthy, you know. Well, we all know what happened.
But I was told democracy was messy, and that we in the pundit class were overreacting, and that Kevin McCarthy had it all handled. Are you saying he didn't have it all handled?
Yeah, no, that was like some amazing spin by day 3. They were like, well, you know what? Let's just chalk this up to the process. It's like no one loves.
It hasn't happened since the Civil War, but yes, it's the process.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is he barely won the House. And a big part of the reason why he won is because moderates in New York were elected and moderates in California. So at the end of the day, also the House Freedom Caucus grew and they decided to flex that power. And he's pretty much, you know, powerless. And it was just a wild week. But this is just going to be his hell. Like, he can't lose votes. I mean, 5 votes, that's all he's got. And George Santos probably won't be sticking around for very long if they have a special election. And that will probably only be if he's indicted, but that might take a little while. But you're already hearing Republicans in Long Island say the guy needs to step down.
Right. But McCarthy said no, he doesn't want him to step down.
Of course not, because he needs that vote. Again, 5 people.
Right.
It's just like, that's it. He needs George Santos. Crazy to think that, right? But then there are others. Like, people are... A big part of the reason why they held off on voting for committee chairs that were in contention was because McCarthy didn't want to alienate others who might possibly want to retire if they don't get their chairmanships. Vern Buchanan.
Explain.
Vern Buchanan is 71 years old. He was running for chairman of the powerful House Ways and Means Committee. He was a ranking member and he didn't get it. Instead, Jason Smith won that. And Jason's like kind of been seen as someone who kisses up to Kevin McCarthy. He's an ally of his. And I, you know, was told that Vern was angry, very angry, expressed his displeasure to Kevin McCarthy. And here's the thing. He's worth more than $100 million. He's 71 years old. And everyone's like, why is this guy from Southwest Florida, like Sarasota area, going to stick around in Congress rich and with no, you know, without having the chairmanship of that Ways and Means Committee? So there was a lot of like talk this week when he lost, like, oh, Vern Buchanan's going to retire. That means another seat for McCarthy would be down for about 2 months during like a special election. That's in the best case scenario. That's if Ron DeSantis calls one immediately. So it was more concerned, and we're kind of assuming that George Santos will eventually have to step down. So that's 3 votes. So as you can tell, every day, everyone's sort of, there's like a parlor game. You know, what happens if Republicans lose a vote, right? And, you know, what will trigger the motion to vacate? You know, will it be Trump having a bad day and saying, why isn't McCarthy endorsing me for president more forcefully? Will it be Matt Gaetz's board and decides he just wants to, you know, not getting enough press, wants to trigger the motion to vacate? Or will it be something like the debt ceiling? And in the meantime, everyone's just counting the votes. And Democrats have to show up for this to make it difficult for McCarthy, because if it's 2 Democrats don't show up, instead of 5 vote extra votes of a majority, he needs 4. So there's an incentive for them to show up. and to make it more difficult for him.
Why did they get rid of proxy voting? Is this just like because they don't want to have anything that looks like a COVID restriction?
I'm sure it's a little bit of like backlash against the COVID changes. And I think, I mean, Republicans will say like constitutionally, you have to be there.
Right. But nobody believes that. I mean, they don't even believe that.
Right. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene was in Costa Rica during the omnibus vote and she voted via proxy on that. So like everybody was abusing it. It wasn't just Republicans. But I was talking to a freshman member who was like, oh, my God, everybody has COVID now. And they're like, not everybody, but people are voting with COVID.
A D or an R?
A D. Yeah. People are because like R's don't test. So you don't know. Don't test. Don't tell. You know,
don't test. Don't tell. Oh, Jesus.
And I mean, Democrats are showing up with masks, like telling people they have COVID, voting and then like sitting off the side of the floor, like coughing. It's like a waiting room.
And Republicans are not wearing masks because they're not allowed to.
Who cares?
Because they don't want to lose their primary challenges.
Apparently, like the crush where the kids that like, you know, children crush. Is it crush, right? Not crush.
Crush, yeah.
Yeah, the crush.
Please ask the area Jew if it's a crush or a crush.
It's a crush. So I don't have kids. I've just revealed the fact that I don't have children.
Nobody keeps their kid in a crush. That's for the baby Jesus.
No, I thought that's like a French term for like a playgroup for kids.
Maybe. I may be the ignorama here, but anyway, continue.
Apparently the Capitol Hill play group or babysitter is very segregated based on which parents make their kids wear masks and which don't.
Oh my God.
And which parents show up with masks on and which don't. So it's kind of hilarious. Like some of the kids, like the kids have to wear masks, but it's kind of a... It's interesting when they pick their kids up. So it's not just on the house floor. It's also in the playroom for children.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, I guess the thing is there's an incentive to show up and vote to make it difficult for Kevin McCarthy and obviously for Republicans to make it easier for Kevin McCarthy. But, you know, people are sick now because there's COVID. But this was something that Republicans wanted to get rid of proxy voting. They're all kind of groaning about it at the same time privately. And now... the House floor is a super spreader event.
Wow.
Because you have to think 400 something people, like there has to be COVID rationally.
That is completely crazy. So explain to me, as we are in this sort of post-liberal Congress, whatever this is, it's just Benghazi's all the way down, or are there other plans here?
Well, I think that this document drama with Biden having classified documents as well in like various locations has become like a gift to the GOP.
Yeah, it seems like.
Yeah, they're going to tear this apart. And I guess it's like, you know, a lot of Democrats I've spoken to have been like, oh God, they should have known this. Like they should have been aware that this may have also been an issue that Biden would have as well. Because apparently, like the document investigation, they're very close to getting Trump on that. But I think this sort of changes everything, right? And what are they going to do? Special counsel investigate, you know, Biden? All I know is that Republicans are going to have a field day with this.
Right.
And it seems to be getting worse. Now, there's a second location where there were documents. So again, like I've seen the comparisons on CNN and the New York Times about, you know, how this is nothing compared to what Trump did.
The problem is it's not about what happened. It's about how the Republicans can use it, right? I mean,
1,000%.
A locked closet at the Penn Biden Center at the University of Pennsylvania is not the same as tons and tons of documents in the Mar-a-Lago basement that Trump wouldn't give up. He kept saying he wouldn't give up, but it doesn't matter if it can be on Fox News, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. And not even that. I mean, like the whole idea of classified, a big part of it was the idea that like classified documents can't leave the White House, right? But like actually it shows that it's kind of common for it to happen.
Right. Yeah. And it undermines the investigation on some level.
It totally does. And apparently they were really close on Trump and it just doesn't seem like that's a viable route. Then you have to go out after the president as well. You know, then there's questions of like, do you have a, I don't know, like a special prosecutor again? I expect you're going to hear about it like it's Benghazi.
Oh, yeah.
And then Hunter Biden, obviously, that's going to be another one. But that's what you do. I mean, like, they can't really pass anything because it won't pass in the Senate, right? It's messaging and investigations and investigate the FBI and defund the IRS. And
right.
Just like it's a lot of messaging points. But I do think, like, I stand by the fact that the reason that Kevin McCarthy has a majority right now is because of Republicans in New York. And everyone says, thank you, Andrew Cuomo, for that. The redistricting.
Thank you, Andrew Cuomo. And also thank you, Jay Jacobs, who shows no interest in resigning.
Right. And then also Republicans in California. So these coastal Republicans, you know, are the reason they have a majority. And they're kind of the red herrings. And, you know, I would think that the White House would be making serious outreach to these people right now, right? And trying right. to build relationships with them so they can pass, you know, a debt ceiling.
Right, because those people are going to lose their seats otherwise.
Right. And the exercises from last week are not really that great. Although I did hear when Matt Gaetz voted for Donald Trump for speaker that a lot of the offices got calls, including in some of those districts, saying, please elect our dear leader, Donald Trump, for speaker. So that was a call.
So let's just get back into this for a second. It does sound like you think, and I think a lot of people think this, that Donald Trump really does think he's coming back.
As speaker or president?
As president.
Yeah, of course, I do think so. I don't think this is just an exercise. I think he really is running. The quality of the campaign is, you know, to be decided. It seems very low energy. And I mean, I guess they're going to South Carolina to have an event, but it's like an intimate event. It's not a rally.
Right.
Just very weird. Like, that's what he was good at. It was the rally, right?
Yeah. I mean, the idea of him choosing to have an intimate event seems odd to me.
Totally. And it's just like, you know, they're trying to show even his launch, like the way that he came out and said he was running in this, what did he say? He wanted an elegant event at Mar-a-Lago again.
Right.
Low energy. Like, that's not what he's about. I mean, if there's anything to say about Trump, like, he had these massive rallies, got tons of people, and they were entertaining. Maybe there's fear that they can't fill stadiums anymore.
Do you think that's right?
It's possible. There's also, like, it costs a lot of money to throw rallies, and he doesn't really have a lot of money right now. He's tapped his high donor network, right? And he's tapped probably his low donor network as well. So there's probably questions about that. And I don't know. I think the choice to go to South Carolina is interesting. Like, he's bypassing New Hampshire, which obviously was a big win for him. But I mean, I have to think it's either just expensive or they don't know if they can get the crowd. Why else?
Right.
I mean, it's a long race and he announced so early. Like, they're going to be burning through money before anyone even announces that they're challenging him.
It was really a mistake, huh?
Yes, but he sort of forced himself into that by saying that he was going to make an announcement before the midterms. And when the midterms were really bad showing, he couldn't back out because then it would make him look like he had been defeated and that he was backing out because the midterms were a poor reflection on him. It was, you know, he boxed himself in. Everyone close to him thought it was a terrible idea for him to run. And they knew this narrative was going to play out. So
do you think he keeps going though?
Yeah. I know. Everybody seems to think that Trump's not running. It's really funny. Like, you're in D.C. and everyone's like, is he really running? And it's like, yes, he's running. Why does everyone think he's not running? I mean, I guess no one else is running.
Because you don't hear anything about him.
Yeah. I mean, I also wonder, too, the fact that he's not on Twitter anymore. He clearly doesn't have any sway over the Republican Party the way he used to, or at least.
Yeah.
Like, the base. I mean, if there's anything to be taken away from that McCarthy voterama, whatever you want to call it, Trump does not have the same sort of sway over the MAGA base. I mean, he couldn't get them to vote for McCarthy.
Yeah, that was my sense, was that. And even like when Lauren Boebert's like my favorite president.
Yeah. They're not scared of him anymore.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't put them on a hit list anyway, because they're like popular in their own right with his base.
Yeah, except that like they used to be. I mean, I'm not saying that he would or he wouldn't put them on a hit list, but they used to be terrified of crossing him.
Oh, for sure.
Right.
I think they're more MAGA than he is now at this point. He's just not as relevant anymore. But I guess he is for primary voters. Okay, I take that back. He's very relevant for like a certain sect of primary voters. I don't know. I just felt like he lost his juice. Maybe he didn't give it enough either. Like maybe he wasn't willing to call them out, single them out by name the way he did against people who impeached him, right?
Right.
I think he knows that his own base is skeptical of Kevin McCarthy. He probably shouldn't have endorsed Kevin McCarthy, frankly.
Right. That's what I wonder too.
I mean, that might be another one where he's like, he made a quick gut political decision and didn't realize that, hey, this might backfire.
Do you think that if Trump had endorsed like Matt Gaetz or tried to run for it himself, that he would have won?
I don't think he would have won himself, and I don't think Matt Gaetz would have won, but I think he could have picked anyone probably like mainstream that wasn't McCarthy.
And they could have won?
Maybe. Like maybe if he endorsed Jim Jordan, maybe. No, I don't know, because the moderates probably wouldn't want to vote for Jim Jordan. It would have been a test of his real power if he endorsed Jim Jordan. I think if he was like, let's all get behind Steve Scalise, if he tweeted that, that would have been a done deal.
Right, right, right. But Steve Scalise was probably going to win anymore.
Yeah, Matt Gaetz, I don't think that would, I don't think a Trump tweet saying let's vote for Matt Gaetz would have done anything.
Right.
But I wonder if a Trump tweet, or truth, excuse me.
Yes, a truth. That's right. Gotta call it a truth. Can't call it a tweet.
Yeah.
God forbid we call it a tweet.
I don't know. If Trump put on an honest to goodness campaign for Jim Jordan, would he have won? I don't know. I also just know that like every time Trump called one of these people like Matt Gaetz or Lauren Boebert or Andy Biggs, they'd be like, we want you for speaker. And then he would stop.
Right. Right,
you know what I mean?
Right, right, right.
He's like the second he's flattered, he's done.
Right, right, right.
He just didn't have it in him to like turn his followers into enemies for Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense.
But this is just another miscalculation, another political miscalculation for Trump.
Tara Palmieri, so interesting. Thank you for coming on. You have to come back.
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be on. Yeah, congrats on all your success.
Aw, thank you, friend.
And now your moment of fuckery.
Molly Jungfast.
Jesse Cannon.
Merrick fucking Garland. I just said that like he was going to come on and do this with us, but really it's just my exasperation with this fucking guy.
Democrats want to make sure that Fox News is able to put together all the false equivalencies it can. So they are giving them all the fuel they can. And Merrick Garland, I mean, think about Merrick Garland, who dragged his feet on the Chinese bank account that Donald Trump had, is now quickly jumping to investigate President Biden. So we are, it looks like some, we're looking down 2 years of a sort of Benghazi meets Whitewater. They're going to Clinton him up.
That's a good way of putting it. You can't help but notice how fast, though, the Biden administration acted on this compared to that slow walk Merrick Garland took to appoint a special counsel for Mr. Trump.
That's my hot take, too. That's it for this episode of Fast Politics. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to hear the best minds in politics make sense of all this chaos. If you enjoyed what you've heard, please send it to a friend and keep the conversation going. And again, thanks for listening.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.